Full Contact Fighter Radio Network, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Now, from Vancouver, British Columbia, here is your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, the third episode, and I am your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from Vancouver, and Brendan Lear joins us now from Edmonton, Alberta, my infamous co-host. Brendan, how are you doing?
Infamous, Kelsey.
Well, you made some pretty bold statements. There was a few cuss words in the last episode that I don't think everyone took too well.
Such is life, Kelsey. This is my my internet radio persona.
Yeah. Well, we definitely need some of that persona on this show. There's no question, and we must be doing something right because onto our third episode now, and it's going to be another great show. We've got Hermes Franca is going to talk to us about his fight on Saturday night, UFC 61, against Joe Jordan. And we also have Jason McDonald coming on, former Team Epic fighter, now out of Red Deer, trains with Josh Russell. One of Canada's better middleweights, without question, and not necessarily known too well in the States, maybe by some of the more hardcore fans. Jason's fought quite a few big names, so we're going to have him on the show. He fought on the Extreme Cage Combat Show in Nova Scotia last weekend, so he's going to join us in a little bit as well.
We have a jam-packed show, Kels, and we better get to it. First of all, your thoughts about the second round of the Pride Openweight Grand Prix.
I thought it was, you know, great. Some great fights, obviously. I guess the result that surprised me a little bit, and anyone who's listened to the first two shows, my mom and my dad who have listened to the first two shows, those people would remember me saying that I thought Wanderlei Silva was going to have a bit of trouble with Fujia, and I was obviously proven quite wrong on that prediction.
There was a moment of trouble.
Yeah.
A slight moment of trouble you noticed before the flurry that actually ended up finishing. That was the beginning of the end of the continuous and sometimes grotesque flurry that was the end of Fujita. There was a moment where you thought, well, things are looking bad, and then...
Did you think the gruesome ref...
It was like the Fujita fight to me was like the sinking of the Titanic, you know? You knew something bad was going to happen, but it took so long to actually inevitably unfold, and it was so grotesque that...
Well,
I think it might have been over quicker.
I think the referee obviously read the medical report about Fujia having the thicker skull, because that, to me, seemed like one of the longer stoppages in Pride history, or at least in the recent Pride history, you know, since the older fights. And, yeah, I mean, some of the people that are watching it with me, all MMA fans, but a couple of them that aren't... you know, didn't follow the sport way back when, were very shocked at how long it took for the ref to jump in and save Fujia. They, you know, I think Wanderlei, without question, it looked to me like he let up on a couple of the soccer kicks.
It looked to me like that as well, and I think Fujita might have benefited from Alistair Overeem's corner in that fight.
Yeah.
But perhaps the referees have been informed about the last Japanese fighter remaining clause, which means that unless they're near death, don't stop the fight.
that could be. Obviously, you know, Yoshida, which would have been one of the Japanese fan base favorites, losing to Krokop, who, you know, devastated him with the leg kicks. Did that fight unfold in the way you thought? I mean, we both figured that Krokop would win, but did you think he would win in that kind of fashion?
I thought that... I actually did think it would unfold in that fashion, because I thought, you know, any time you have a really high level judoka fighting, the takedowns are going to be are going to look unique, and they're not going to be, you know, wrestling takedowns. So you can't simply sprawl against a judoka. But at the same time, Fedor is probably one of the most successful fighters to transition judo and sambo throws into MMA, and he certainly didn't have his way in terms of taking Krokop down at will. So I thought, you know, basically that was Yoshida's only game, and it looked like he got close a couple times. I think with Anuchi Mata he had very close, but Krokop again just beautifully defended those takedowns and then sort of displayed the old adage. I think it was think Nietzsche wrote one time that a devil and a saint, after a day of hill climbing, become quite equal creatures, meaning that regardless of what kind of air you bring to the ring, and what kind of lineage you have, if you have any holes in your game, that they're going to show through and they're going to expose you. And I think that's exactly what happened to Yoshida.
Yeah, I thought for a little bit actually Krokop looked a bit tired, but you know, he obviously pulled it out, and it looked at one point that he might have even kind of jumped into Yoshida's guard, which somewhat surprised me when that happened.
And then jumped back out of it almost seemingly at will. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think we both picked that fight correctly, and another one that we picked correctly, if I'm remembering correctly, Josh Barnett beating Mark Hunt. You know, I didn't expect Josh to win the fight that quickly, but you know, it definitely demonstrated to the Mark Hunt bandwagon, so to speak, that you know Mark has some work to do on the ground.
And I don't think either of those fights demonstrate that if you're not well rounded, if you're a one or two or even a three trick pony, you know, any glaring weakness that you have will be exploited. And I think those are two obvious ones. And Yoshida didn't demonstrate any ability to check those tough kicks. And I don't know if he didn't think that Krokop would kick him, or what's going on, or maybe he is not trained with gigantic men who can kick down trees. But you know, his glaring weakness was exposed, I think. And the same for Hunt. A lot of people were on Hunt's bandwagon. And he's a big, tough guy, and he can throw, and he can, you know, you can't knock him out. But at the same time, you know, if he's got an elbow and a shoulder, he's going to get submitted. You know, he can be submitted. And I think Barnett was just the textbook and textbook game plan, you know, of how to beat a big guy like that.
Yeah, and you know, really, Mark Hunt, I mean, he's had some big wins without question, and not taking anything away from Mark. But in saying that, you know, he was taking on a guy, Josh Barnett, who is an experienced, world-class kind of grappler. And, you know, to Barnett's credit, didn't let his ego get the better of him, wasn't too tempted to stand and try to bang with Hunt, and took him down and got the easy submission. So definitely, you know, Barnett is in the title mix now.
I think it'll be interesting, you know. I think the last few fights he's had in Pride, he's gotten better looking every time, you know, and Barnett has always had that, has always had, kind of a gut on him, and he's, you know, been a pro wrestler and can fight MMA and done this and done that, and been kind of a jack of all trades, but it looks like he's finally, at least physically and mentally dedicated to working his way through this tournament, and, he never looked better. He looked in the best shape of his life, and, really, you know, being able to stand and trade with Alexander Emelianenko on his feet, and then display the ground that he's displayed as well. I think he's, you know, got to be one of the, you know, at least got to be in there in the end, I think.
Yeah, and you know, looking at another one of our predictions from the last show, Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira taking on Fabricio Werdum, and you know, we both picked Nogueira to win that, and it looked like it was going to end a lot quicker, but to Verdum's credit, he held on. It was a very entertaining fight, I thought.
I thought so as well.
Yeah, were you somewhat surprised that Werdum managed to hold on until the end, or considering how the fight was going early on?
I think for a relatively, I don't want to say inexperienced, but in terms of the big game, inexperienced in huge fights, you know, Nogueira has been in half a dozen huge fights, and Werdum has been in no huge fights relative to Pride, or relative to big world championship fights. And I think he really displayed a lot of integrity and a lot of courage in that fight, coming back, and he could have easily, you know, gone down a couple different times. And at the end of the fight, Nogueira looked like he had been in a fight, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I, in saying that, I thought Nogueira looked sharp too. I mean, his stand-up looked great. I mean, I guess you could argue that, you know, he didn't put a waiver to him, and perhaps that shows a lack of killer instinct on the feet, but... You know, considering Verdum on the ground is as good, if not better, than Nogueira, some would argue. You know, I thought Nogueira looked good, and it's gonna be an absolutely intriguing Final Four without question.
Yeah, I think Nogueira did what Nogueira does best, and he takes the fight up to a good pace. Actually, he surprised me by looking tired a couple times in the fight. But he fights very systematically, rattled, and he does his job. He goes in there and does his job, and he doesn't get too excited. And it seems to me that Nogueira's always been a bit of an attrition fighter, and he's happy to fight lesser fighters one, two, and three rounds, and win simply through attrition until they're too exhausted and make a dumb mistake or just to basically outwork them through the entire fight.
Yeah, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see what Pride announces for the final four matchups. Do you have any inkling on which way they might lean?
You never know. I'm probably better predicting, what my dog's going to do than what Pride will do in their fights. So that's surprising sometimes. It's very difficult to predict, but I'm not sure. What's your dream matchup for the finals?
Yeah, well, my gut tells me that they'll do Barnett, Nogueira, Silva, Krokop. And then that way in the final, you've kind of got that classic matchup of noted striker versus, the ground expert.
I think I would maybe mix it up a bit more differently, and I guess although we've seen this once before, I think Krokop and Vanderlei did fight, but it was in under some kind of weird rules, you know, an exhibition match in Pride.
Yeah,
I think if you make the fights that you know that are going to be exciting fights that people want to see, and whoever ends up finishing in the end. So I would actually like to see Silva Krokop and Nogueira and Barnett.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's what I said.
Yeah. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I thought you said the other way around.
Yeah, so that would set up in the final. That
oh, yeah,
you've
I'm,
got...
yeah, I'm thinking... Oh, sorry, I was thinking in the final, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so, you know, so that sets up in the final that... Regardless, you've got either Silva or Krokop. You've got the striker versus Barnett or Nogueira. You've got, you know, the guy who's more reputed as a ground fighter for the final. But I mean, you're absolutely right. It's almost pointless to speculate because you never know with those guys what they're going to choose to do. The last fight I want to touch on really quickly is Vitor Belfort taking on Takahashi and the quick knockout. And you know. The Belfort fans, there's many of them, and, you know, for a guy who was so entertaining and became, you know, famous in the small circle that MMA was at the time, every time the guy comes back with a win, you know, it just seems like you get all these people coming out, and Belfort's back, and look out, and now he's got his head on straight, and I don't want to sound like a prick, but we've heard this before.
Is it because he's so beautiful?
Well, I mean, he's popular with the ladies, so...
He's popular with a lot of guys.
Yeah.
I think Vitor Belfort's career, to me, the fights that have made his career have basically, you know, if you put them end-to-end, if you fought them end-to-end, will probably account for about, you know, 2.5 minutes of actual fighting.
Yeah.
And then the fights that have given him hard times would take up several hours. So I don't know. I see his potential, and he's an exciting striker, but I'm not sure at this level. When Vitor first started out and was knocking out guys like Tank Abbott and
Scott, you know,
20
Rizzo.
Seconds or whatever he did, mm-hmm. those days are gone forever, my friend. You know, and
yeah.
I think you know he's not going to run across a lot of guys like Takahashi. And I think that was a gift given to him. To sort of get the ground back under his feet, but at the same time, you know, apart from his Tito fight, which I actually thought he won he just really hasn't done anything to knock my socks off. He looks like a sort of a middle of the road light heavy. You know?
Yeah, he looks like he's never really shown an unbelievable arsenal of submissions. From what I can remember, I remember him pulling out kind of an armbar on Couture when I think their second fight, and Couture mentioning that it was one of the quicker armbars that he had seen. To Vitor's credit, but I agree with you, and I've gotten ferocious arguments with people about this before, the Belfort fans, and you know he seems like a nice guy, and he's definitely entertaining when he's fighting. In that style that it made him famous, and obviously the big win over Vanderlei, really got things going for him back then. And in his defense, his fight against Chuck Liddell, I thought he looked pretty good. You know, he took that fight on short notice, as everyone always says. And I still think that I've watched the Tito fight several times, and I still have Belfort winning that fight. But I agree with you. Other than that, you know, he beat Anthony Ray, who is, you know, not a world-class fighter, and then he lost to Alistair Overeem at Strikeforce Revenge, and everyone said that was a very boring, lackluster performance by him. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I mean, to say that all of a sudden he's a contender because he's knocked out a fighter like Takahashi, I just think is way, way too premature.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to sound like I count Vitor out because he doesn't have an unblemished career, because I think in this day and age, it's profoundly unrealistic for any MMA fighter to have an unblemished record. And if you have a 14-0 record or a 15-0 record in MMA, I don't think you've been fighting the right types of people. So you have to expect losses in this day and age, because MMA is not a single science like boxing, say, for instance. It's so complex, and there are so many different fighters that can give you trouble in so many different ways that you have to expect people to lose. And I think the UFC now is thankfully finally coming around to that idea as well, that, you know, the whole one loss and you're out idea has gone by the wayside. But it's not simply because of that, but I think that Vitor is, there have been too few fights where he's really hung in there and really sort of gutted it out and said, you know, I really want to see that guy fight again.
Yeah, no, I agree. On that note, Mr. McDonald is waiting, so we're gonna take a break, and then when we come back, we'll be talking to Jason, the athlete McDonald. You're listening to Full Contact.
I gotta give one last shout out to Pavel Nastula, who finally won his fight. I think his last fight in his Pride contract.
Yeah.
Looked great doing it. He was in tough against Alexander and against Nogueira, but he finally pulled one out, and I hope that we see him again.
All right, there's Brennan's plug. And here's my plug. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pit Bulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Milicic as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Club, led by Mark Coleman, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton, plus the historic super match of Milicic versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League, pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV.
Hey, this is Rashad. You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Okay, we're back on the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network, and joining us now from Red Deer, Alberta, is Jason, the athlete McDonald. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
We're doing okay. This is our third show now, and like Brendan and I were talking about in the intro, we're still afloat. We're not drowning yet, so
it's just it's just we're proving the adage that any asshole can have their own internet radio show. I won't say who the asshole is.
I was just going to say, is it okay if I just call you an asshole then?
You guys are going to get me in trouble with the big wigs upstairs. Jason, obviously coming off a big win at the ECC on the weekend against Jerry Spiegel, I saw a couple of interviews that you've done. Just talk us a little bit, for those who didn't hear about the fight and what happened, just tell us a little bit about your thoughts on the fight and the end of the fight.
Well, you know, Jerry took the fight on. Hello. Hey, sorry guys, kind of lost it there for a sec. Jerry took the fight on short notice. He filled in for Stefan Padla when he got injured, and I didn't know a whole lot about him going into the fight. I knew he didn't have a great record, but other than that, I'd never seen him fight. So the start of the fight, I didn't know exactly what to expect. Backstage warming up, we were working some combinations, and I was really gonna try to keep the fight standing and try to knock him out or finish him off on his feet. And lo and behold, the bell sounds and he comes out and he's a left-hander. So that had blown everything we were going through backstage. So it took me a few minutes, in there sometimes it feels like a few minutes. It took me a few seconds to regroup and just prepare mentally in my head to fight a left-handed fighter.
Is it just me, or does there seem to be a disproportionate amount of left-handed fighters in MMA?
I don't know. It's not a common. I mean, I could probably name the top-notch guys that are left-handed. There's not many left-handed guys out there, but. So it's something you usually don't expect to see, I've trained to fight left-handed guys, so it's not a big deal, but I kind of just had to switch on the fly there.
And continuing that thread, I know you fought numerous times, and you're a fighter of in MMA of near vast experience. Does it shake you to come into a fight and have your opponent switched at short notice, or having fought as many times as you have, is that just another day at the races for you?
I think it's just another day. As I said, you've trained for different styles and different opponents, and having lots of experience. I've had lots of different looks at guys. I've fought great stand-up guys. I've fought great ground guys and left-handed, right-handed. It's nothing you've never seen before. It's just prior to a fight, you'd like to when you're mentally preparing and you're trying to throw together a game plan, and you kind of paint that image of what the person you're fighting is in your head, whether he's a great ground guy and you're going to have to be careful on the ground, or if he's a great stand-up guy and you're going to want to try to get the fight to the ground. Same as a left or right-handed fighter, you paint a picture, you're working backstage thinking I'm going to throw this combination, inside leg kick, right hand, and then a knee. And then all of a sudden the guy comes out and he's left-handed and you're like, well, wait a second, that combination's not going to work at all now. So, you just kind of switch on the flyer. For me anyways, I just kind of, wait a second, things aren't going to exactly go as I planned here. And I think that's what makes a fight, is sometimes you can have the best game plan put together, and you start the fight, and all of a sudden that whole game plan goes to hell. And you got to kind of, I think the good fighters regroup in their head and they start doing what they have to do to win the fight.
Now, you mentioned the fact that Stefan Potvin was injured and couldn't take the fight. And I think a lot of the Canadian fans that follow the sport intensely were very disappointed. That was, being billed as a great Canadian middleweight matchup. I guess my question is kind of a two-part question for you, Jason. One, what was your strategy going to be against Stefan Potvin, a Brazilian Canada top team member? And two, you mentioned that Spiegel has some losses. is it kind of disappointing that you didn't get to take on a fighter like Potvin, where, you know, maybe more people would be noticing the win if you were to beat him?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, that's kind of a two-part answer as well. It's anytime you get the opportunity to get in the ring and you know, utilize some of the skills you've been working on and you know, gain ring experience, I think it's a positive thing, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's against, you know, a top-notch opponent or sometimes not a top-notch opponent. But, I mean, it gives you an opportunity to get in there and you know, I think it's very important to be in the ring. Watch it. You get comfortable with the crowd. You get comfortable in the ring and in the cage. And I think, you know, ring experience can go a long way with a fighter. As far as not being able to fight Stepan, I mean, it was a little disappointing. People consider him to be, you know, one of the top middleweights in Canada. He's been around for a long, long time, grinding out victories. And, you know, he had some losses there, and then he was kind of back on a little bit of a streak. So, you know, I was looking forward to getting in there and, you know, fighting him and solidifying my spot at the, you know, one of the top of the food chain. So it's, you know, it was a bit disappointing to not get in there and battle it out with Stefan, but, you know, like I said, getting in there with the last seed, I mean, you have to give props to any fighter who takes a tough fight. I consider a fight against me to be a tough fight. Yeah. You have to give props to any guy that jumps in there on 2 weeks' notice and fills in. So, you know, I get a chance to work some of the stuff that I've been working on with my trainers, and, you know, I got an opportunity to fight. I'm originally from Nova Scotia, so I got an opportunity to see my family and fight in front of some friends and family. So, you know, yeah, all in all, it was a positive thing.
Right.
How did you find the fight fans in Nova Scotia? This was the first MMA the sanctioned MMA event, if I'm correct, out there. Did you find them to be? I won't lead you. So they, I won't lead you in any particular way. But were they? More Japanese than Stampede Wrestling?
No. They were definitely into the fights. They were definitely excited and happy to have mixed martial arts in their province. You know, this one in Moncton, New Brunswick was the second card of the Extreme Cage Combat. Their first one was in Halifax, and you know, it was in front of a sold out crowd of 5,000 or 6,000 people. So that just goes to show you right there how excited the people were to have mixed martial arts in their province, you know, and they, you know, they're excited. It's, I mean, from a fighter standpoint, you really only see the crowd as you're walking out and afterwards, and being the main event, you know, a lot of the crowd was leaving at the end of my, like, after my fight was over, but, man, they seemed excited. They, you know, there was lots of people there cheering and slapping high fives and really enjoying themselves. So I think MMA will be around in the Maritimes for a long time to come.
Now, you mentioned the first show, the first EC show in Nova Scotia, and obviously, yeah, this one was the second one. And in the first show, you fought Gideon Ray, and you beat him by unanimous decision. What did that mean to you to beat a caliber fighter like Gideon Ray? And then where is all this talk going on? Where did this all start about his trainer, Keith Hackney, having some issues with you or wanting to fight you? Do you know any, like, can you give us a little detail on all that?
You know, well, I mean, as far as fighting, you know, Gideon, it's like I've said a million times, is anytime you can get in the ring there and fight top-notch guys and knock off top-notch guys, it solidifies, you know, exactly what I want to do. I want to prove to everyone that, you know, I'm one of the top dogs out there, and I want my shot in the UFC. I want my shot. And, I mean, fighting Gideon was great. I mean, not only did I fight him, I dominated him for 3 rounds. Anyone that was there and watched the fight will tell you that. I didn't squeak out a decision victory. I dominated him from the first bell. And, I mean, it's nice to go out there and execute your game plan, dominate the fight, and come out with a victory. And, you know, as far as Keith Hackney goes, Gideon's trainer, I have no idea where that rumor came from. I've heard it through the grapevine. I don't know if it's someone trying to creates something that's not there or what, but I've seen them briefly at weigh-in prior to the fight, and then the next time I seen them was when I walked into the ring, and, you know, I've never exchanged any words with Keith Hackney other than thank you at the end of the fight, and so I have no idea why there was a rift between him and I.
For the record, I couldn't find any Keith Hackney quotes.
No one can listen to Keith, no one can hear the name Keith Hackney without having the image of Joe Son's nuts being punched in one of the early UFCs. So that's gotta when you hear something like that, Keith Hackney's after me, that's gotta, you know, still be an imposing thought to deal with.
Well, in the sense that I'm gonna have to go out and buy like a titanium can. but other than that's about it. You know, no disrespect to Keith Hackney, but he's he's getting a little long in the tooth. And I think his best years are behind him. I could be wrong, but, you know, I think his best years are behind him, and I would be one hell of a poor choice as a comeback fight for Keith Hackney.
And for the record,
you've had a couple great years behind you now, and you had a bunch of great wins, but this may sound ironic, but your losses, you've got some fantastic losses as well. Kelsey and I were both in Edmonton to see the Patrick Côté fight, and that fight was phenomenal. A 5-round fight, and it went right to a decision. And I tell you, the decision, for me, I don't think I could have called that fight. I would have hated to be in a position to call it. And it was just, first of all, I have to give you credit. It was an amazing fight. What's it like to lose a fight like that? And do you at least feel good that when you do have those tough losses like the Côté and Starnes, that you're fighting guys who are literally top caliber guys and now working their way well into the UFC structure?
I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you one thing first. The Starnes fight I took on 2 days' notice. I took that fight on a Tuesday. It was after I fought Joe Dirksen, and I'm an ERT instructor for work, and I was in Edmonton teaching a course to new recruits, and I wasn't training. I just came off fighting Joe Dirksen, and after beating Joe Dirksen, nonetheless, and I kind of expected a little bit of a break there, and this fight came up. They called me. I was out drinking with my buddies on Monday. They called me on Tuesday and said, we need you to fill in on Friday, and stupid me, you know, sometimes I don't make the best decisions, but they had offered me a lot of money that I couldn't turn down right before Christmas. And I took the fight. I said yes to the fight, never knowing who Caleb Starnes was or what he had done in MMA. I had never heard of him. And as far as looking up his record at that point on any website, it looked as though he had really fought nobody. Mm-hmm. And then, I take this fight on short notice, and it's the Friday we fought on. The weigh-ins were on Friday. I was marking exams on Friday morning, and I was in Vancouver Friday afternoon cutting weight and fighting on Saturday. You know, I wasn't in a position. I'm not trying to make excuses by any means, but I wasn't prepared to fight at that point. And I would love a shot, another shot at Caleb, just to kind of, give me time to prepare and put us on an even playing field and give me another shot at that one, and I see things going down a little differently. But, it's good for him. He's gone on to bigger things, and someday if he ever comes back around my way, I'd love another shot at that fight. And the same goes for Patrick, him and I had an all-out war. You walk away from those kind of fights, and it's mixed emotions, right? You were so close. I was so close to finishing that fight a couple times. It opened a nasty cut. I spent the whole second round on his back trying to choke him off. But that guy just had the unbelievable will to win. Like he wasn't going to lose that night. No matter what I did, he wasn't willing to lose.
It was one of the best fights that I saw, and Kelsey and I both agree on this. It was one of the best fights that we saw all year, and it was just great to be there.
Yeah, well, you know what, and like I said, you leave that fight with mixed emotions. I afterwards, I was happy with my performance. It's always nice to go through a fight like that and see that you have it in you, and it brings out some things you weren't sure you had, some toughness and some grit, and you know, it really pushes you. You know, we were pushing into the fifth round, and it's still going pretty strong in the fifth round. So, you know, you come out of it with mixed emotions. I was very disappointed at the loss, but I was happy with my performance, and, you know, to see Patrick go on. And in my opinion, I think Patrick Cote is probably the best middleweight in Canada right now. And I know he has a loss to Joe Dirksen, but then I turn around and beat Joe Dirksen, and then Cote beats me in a tough five-round fight. So, who's the best out there? David Loazo. You know, people argue David Loazo is the best, but then, you know, we haven't seen David Loazo. We've seen him do all right against, you know, mediocre competition, and then he gets the opportunity to step up, and obviously, I don't know if he wasn't ready for that fight or you know, what had happened, but, you know, at the end of the day, in my opinion, Patrick Cote is probably the best middleweight that we have out there. You know, if you take Dennis Kang out of the mix, because he's fighting overseas, of course.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
Would know better than most, I guess.
Yeah,
I guess, you know, I guess I've had a little, other than David Loazo, I've had a little taste of all of them.
Yeah.
And you know, and on any given day, you know, one guy's going to beat the other, you know. So, I got a little off track there, but.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, the UFC, if Patrick Cote and Loazo do ever meet. It'll be an interesting fight. And, you know, I do want to just clarify a couple things, just so people don't get the wrong idea. With the Hackney stuff, and now that's a few minutes ago, but I just wanted to make sure that people understood that I did not read any comments from Keith, that it was all just pure speculation. And then
you know what, and I've only heard those rumors.
Yeah, exactly.
Fine as well. I've never read anything from Keith Hackney's mouth or heard anything from his mouth as well. You know, like I said, it could be people just trying. And we all know that that happens a lot. People create fictitious rifts that just aren't there. You know, that such and such doesn't like this person, or so, you know, and in fact, it's the complete opposite.
Now, just looking ahead to your immediate future here, Jason, what's planned? I know you've got another fight coming up in the MFC. Are you going back to the Extreme Cage Combat anytime soon? What do you know? What's in store for you here in the immediate future?
Well, the Extreme Cage Combat has another event coming. They're going back to Halifax, and they're looking to sell the place out again. And as far as I know, I'm not going to speak on behalf of them. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be the main event on their cards in the next couple of weeks here. And then, of course, after that, September 8th in Edmonton, Alberta, it'll be the MFC. I'll be back. And I'm looking for a tough fight there, hopefully the main event fight there. And then, you know, after that, hopefully I can put together, you know, another two victories here, bang, bang in a row. And after that, I don't know. I would like to think I'll be fighting in the UFC at that point, but, you know, that's not up to me.
That was my next question to you. Who on earth do you have to beat to get a chance, to get a shot at the UFC?
Hey,
is it going to take Keith Hackney? Is it going to take Keith Hackney getting beating us all, or what's it going to take to get you into the UFC?
You know, I wish we had Joe Silva and Dana White on the line here to ask them the same question. You know, it's their business, and how they run their business, I guess, is up to them. We've all seen some of the people that have been fighting in the UFC in the past number of months, and, you know, if I don't deserve a shot amongst them people, then who does? But, you know, I really don't know what to say. It seems like the trend these days with the UFC is that you have to be attached to a team that's already solidified a spot in the UFC. You know, you got a lot of militage guys fighting in there, and when there's a place to be filled, it seems like they always go back to those teams. You know, you got guys from the ATT American Top Team in there, and you got anyone kind of attached with George St. Pierre, and kind of being pulled in there as well. So, you know, I really don't know. Mark has spoke at length with Joe Silva, and it seemed that their biggest issue at the time with me was that I was having trouble putting together a big number of wins in a row. No, I'm not sure that they took a look at the opponents that I was losing to, or how I was losing. You know, I was losing close decisions. As you guys said, my fight in Patrick Cote's was one of the most enjoyable you had seen all year. I had lost a close decision to Marvin Eastman. I don't know who you have to beat, or I don't know what you got to do. I had beat Joe Dirksen, and I beat Gideon Ray, who seemed to be mainstays in the UFC. So, you know, I don't know what more I can do to get a spot in there. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep fighting, and I'm going to keep winning fights, and surely at some point they got to say, okay, let's give the devil his due.
Well, is Davenport really that much different than Red Deer, Alberta? Would be that much of a change for you, Jason?
Well, you know what? I have a wife and three kids, and I don't know if they'd be willing to lift up and take off to Iowa. But at this point, I got a great team of people here right now. You know, over the years I've struggled with training partners and people to train with, and right now I have a great thing going with Mark Pavlich and the pro boxers at Panthers Gym and Josh Russell out of Gracie Baja Calgary. You know, I got some great guys to work with now, and it seems like every day I'm going into the gym and learning new stuff. So things are going good for me right now. There was a point there where I was kind of in a little bit of a lull, where I didn't have the training partners and I didn't have the trainers, and I wasn't learning new stuff every day, and it was starting to, my fighting style was getting a little stale. But you know, like I said, with these new resources that I have, every day I'm learning something in the gym, and I think, you know, over the past year my skills are getting better and better and better. And you know, to go back to one of those first questions about, is it stepping backwards fighting someone of less caliber? Like, say, anytime you could get in the ring and work on some of those new skills you're learning, it's a good thing.
Well, Jason, we appreciate you taking time out. I know you're a busy guy with your work and your family life, so we appreciate you coming on the show. All the best in the future, and maybe we'll talk to you soon, hopefully with your upcoming, when you know who you're fighting in the upcoming ECC.
Yeah, well, the show is here in a couple weeks, so as soon as we nail something down, for sure, I'd love to talk to you guys again. Thank you for the time.
Fantastic, Jason. Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Night, guys.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing full contact fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fight wear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic full contact fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a full contact fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full contact fighter, the undefeated, no holds barred new source of the world.
Hey, it's Mark the Machine Hobnik, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mullen.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network. And now, from his upscale 300-square-foot igloo in the trendy Icefield district of Vancouver, British Columbia, he knows what he's talking about. Here's your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Okay, here we are, Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now in Las Vegas is Hermes Franca. Hermes, how are you doing today, man?
Hey, very good, man. How's everything? Good?
Yeah, very well. Thanks for taking some time out, especially only a couple days away from UFC 61, so we appreciate you coming on the show.
No problem, man. It's my pleasure.
I guess right off the bat, Hermes, you know, the obvious question is you're taking on Joe Jordan this weekend. What do you know about your opponent, and what do you expect him to try to do against you Saturday night?
Yeah, what I know, he's a wrestler, very good, you know. He's a tough fighter, so he trained with Vet Miller Beach Camp, so he's doing well, you know. So, I prepare myself for my next fight, by now in UFC. We'll be a good fight. I think we'll be a good fight. I hope it's fast.
Yeah.
So, Hermes, I have a question for you. Now you're seeing a lot of higher level Brazilian jiu-jitsu belts fighting who happen to be Americans as well. And I was wondering, as a Brazilian, does it give you a sense of pride beating Brazilian jiu-jitsu higher blue and brown belts who aren't Brazilian? Is there a sort of sense of Brazilian ownership over BJJ, or is each opponent just another opponent to you?
Yeah, I don't know, because a lot of guys, like, if you can see a lot of wrestlers, they doing jiu-jitsu right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can see Matt Hughes, he submitted everybody. You can see Jeff Monson, you know? So I think it's BJJ, because BJJ, I think, is the best martial arts right now, you know what I mean? Everybody does that, you know? And everybody does jiu-jitsu. It doesn't mean, like, just Brazilians, you know? Everybody today does jiu-jitsu.
No, Hermes,
obviously
you train right now. You're training with the American Top Team in Florida, one of the better jiu-jitsu teams. Tell us a little bit about who helped you get ready for your fight coming up, and tell us a little bit about the amount of depth of talent, and especially with the jiu-jitsu, level of jiu-jitsu that you get out of that school.
Yeah, but I have to tell, like, a lot of guys doesn't know, but I'm not American Top Team anymore, you know. I have my own academies. It's in Jupiter, Florida.
The Armory, right?
Yes.
The Armory, right, Hermes?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
So
my
I have Chris Pellegrino, he's a good wrestler. He came from Renzo Gracie, and I gave to him his black belt, and now he has a big chance at his opportunity to fight in UFC, and I'm so happy because we're going to fight at the same show. So we train hard. We have, like, a couple of fighters like Matt Wyman. We have good instructors like Wild Boys. He's a multi fighter too. We have Paulo Guerrero. He's from Brazil. He's a King of the Cage champ. We have Rafael Chaves. He's a black belt. So we have a great team, great academy, a lot of big students, you know. It's doing very well.
Hermes, I noticed that a lot of your fighters are at the Armory are 155ers or lighter. Was that a conscious decision of yours, or is that just how it's happened?
No, it's happened because Chris Pellegrino, he's 170, he's light. And Paulo, he's 145, and I'm 155, and Matt Wyman right now is 155. We're just looking for, like, not just for fighters, you know, we look for good instructors. And all these guys are good instructors. So Kurt Pellegrino is an excellent instructor, you know. He teaches the wrestling, and he teaches the kids. We have, like, 30, 35 kids on the mat. And Matt Wyman, he helps white boys in a multi, you know. It's not just because I won a lot of weight fights. No, you know, it's happened.
Now, obviously talking about the 155-pound division and the return of it to the UFC, a division that you competed in before, Hermes, what are your thoughts on the, and Brendan and I have talked to some other guests in the last couple of weeks, Kenny Florian being one of them, and he remarked about the, and Mark Hominick as well, and they both remarked about the level of talent that now exists already in the rebirth of the lightweight division.
Uh-huh.
What are your thoughts on the level of skill of fighters that have already been signed by the UFC to compete in the lightweight division?
Yeah, it's hard to say because nowadays, you can see, like, you know, you never see a real champ, I mean, like, a fighter who can beat everybody, you know?
Right.
You can see, like, Hominick beat Yves Edwards. You can see, like, what is his name? Florian, you know? beat what is named Stout, right?
Oh, it's yeah.
His Stout, he beat Specifish beat Matt Wymer, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to figure out who is the champ, real champ, you know? It's crazy. Like everybody's good, you know what I mean? If you do a you know, it's not a mistake, you out. So it's hard to say. Well, I think, in my opinion, 155 right now is one of the best divisions, you know? A lot of action.
Mm-hmm. Hermes, I wanted to ask you a question about your preparation now. You're a couple of days out, and some fighters go over the fight, their fight in their mind, and try and attempt to think through all the permutations and combinations of situations that they'll be in. And some fighters just like to clear their mind and don't think about fighting at all. How do you prepare now that you're so close to your fight?
Yeah, I prepare myself. I like to see who is my opponent, you know, learn his game, and work, make a plan, and work for beating him. I mean, if the guy is a wrestler, you know, I'm going to try to take him down or sweep him, you know. If the guy has a good stand-up, that's what I have to do, you know, work my stand up a little bit and try taking down, you know. I don't go crazy. I make a plan. I have to see who's my next opponent and learn, study his game, you know what I mean? And make my schedule, my program.
And how long can you stick with the plan usually during a fight?
Oh, it's like right now I'm kind of like almost every month, you know what I mean? For like a couple of weeks, like 3-4 weeks is enough. If you're in shape like I'm doing right now, you know, keep my machine on, fighting every month. So three weeks is enough.
Mm. Now, you mentioned how often you're fighting, Hermes, and you know, I believe, I could be wrong, but I think you fought four times already in 2006, and you've won four in a row. 2005 was a bit of a tough year for you. You had a few losses. What do you attribute the dramatic turnaround and some big wins, you know, over guys like Gabe Rudiger and Ryan Schultz, Brandon Olsen? What do you attribute the turnaround to, Hermes?
Yeah, well, because, like I told you, right now I have a great academy, great students, you know, and it's good energy at my academy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's hard to like, in 2005, three loss, man, for a fighter is horrible, you know what I mean? I was, oh my God, what am I gonna do? But all my students, my partners, you know, told me to keep training, keep fighting, because they know my potential, and say, Hermes, you're good, man, you know? Come on, let's go train, let's go. And I say, yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. And man, it's unbelievable, you know, like, my energy is much better, my mind is good. My body's okay, it's 100% cool, you know, I can fight every week, believe me, you know. I'm so happy in UFC right now, so, you know, I'm feeling good, great, thanks God.
Hermes, do you think you'll be able to fight as much as you want for the UFC?
Man, like I told you, I can fight every week, believe me, I'm not kidding, you know what I mean? I'm so excited, so happy, you know, I'm feeling good, I'm in good shape, my mind's clean, you know. So, I believe me, I'm not thinking to stop right now, you know, I can fight forever.
Go ahead, Kelsey.
Okay, thanks. Two of your more memorable fights were against Yves Edwards, who's fighting Joe Stevenson this weekend. I guess my first question to you is, would you like an opportunity to fight Yves again? You dropped, you know, two split decision victories, and some people had you winning those fights. Would you like to get in the octagon again with Yves and for a third fight, Hermes?
No, man. Just for one reason. Right now, we are good friends, we train together, we was training together, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I went to his house in Texas, he came in Florida, you know? So, he just looks like my brother, you know, exchange calls. So, you know, of course, we are professional. But if I have to fight again, I hope this was a title shot, you know what I mean?
Right.
And we'll be tough, because, man, he's awesome. But we are professional, you know? So I don't want to challenge him, you know? If I have to fight again, like I say, I hope he get a title shot, you know, not because I want to fight and I want to beat him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who do you like in Eve's, how do you like Eve's chances against Stevenson this weekend?
Oh, he's been good, you know. I was training with him this morning. He's in great shape. I made my weight right now, 155. He's 158. He's strong, you know. He's good, 8,000 defense. I think he's going to win, for sure, definitely. I think so.
Now, you know, you were talking about your student, Kurt Pellegrino. And what do you think he has to do then to, in taking on Drew Fickett, who's known for some great submission skills and some pretty good stand-up? What do you think Kurt has to do to win his fight against Drew then, Hermes?
I mean, like, I don't know what he has to do because it's hard to say. You know, in the cage, everything can happen. But he prepares himself to everything, believe me. He's in good shape. He's already 170. He's a strong guy. He's a good jiu-jitsu guy for MMA. You know what I mean? And he has great chance, you know? And Jerry Spagnabal will be his first fight in the UFC, so he has a little bit pressure. But he's a good competitor, you know? He's a good grappler, good wrestling. Man, he's gonna be a good show. Just wait and see.
All right.
And Hermes, I have one last question for you, and I'm not sure that Americans or North Americans will appreciate the significance of this, but there was a great tragedy worldwide, especially South American tragedy this week when Brazil was knocked out of the World Cup. How has that affected your training for fighting?
Yeah, it's funny because, like, is in Brazil. Everybody loves that, you know, nobody works, nobody does nothing. But it's in USA, it's cool, you know what I mean? Like, everybody who cares about football, you know, about soccer. So, that's cool, I was trained, you know, that's okay. I don't care, man. I am 50 American now and 50 Brazilian, so my American side was, you know, is in my side right now.
France or Italy?
Yeah, we'd be Italy and France, right?
Yeah, who are you picking?
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't care, man. You know, like, Brazil and Wars, but I can do it. I want to just fight and win my fight, and that's it.
That's a serious focus coming from a Brazilian. I appreciate that.
Unquestionable dedication.
No problem, man. No problem.
Now, Hermes, I guess last question for myself for you is you care to make a prediction then on your fight this weekend?
My fight?
Yeah, prediction for your fight.
It's hard to, like, I don't like to say that, but believe me, guys, I'm going to do my best. You know, I prepare myself to do that. And, man, I hope to be fast, you know, like I'm doing right now, you know, like less than a minute.
All right, Hermes, well, we appreciate you taking time so close out to the fight, and best of luck this weekend. And
good luck to you, Hermes.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it. Thank you for the support.
Okay, take care.
You will.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pitbulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Milicic as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Club, led by Mark Coleman, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic super match of Milicic versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV.
Well, Brendan, another interesting show. Hermes Franca and Jason McDonald, our thanks to them once again. You know, McDonald had some interesting things to say.
It will, I think I get the sense that he wants to fight in the UFC, for who's ever listening. And, it's an interesting dynamic, and I think there's probably a lot of guys in Jason's shoes who are you know, good, solid fighters who gut it out. They put their work in. They do what they can. And I think are in a sense, probably seem disenfranchised because, you know, now they have this commitment to do the show twice, two or three times a year. And then they also have the, you know, the subsequent commitment to get these guys fights. And I know they're doing tons of shows next year, but it's got to be tough for these guys who've got to work themselves up outside of the show, you know, to get the shot, especially in places like Red Deer, Alberta, say, for instance. It's not a big,
MMA
central
hub
by any means.
Yeah. Well, and I think the point that, you know, that Jason alluded to, I think is a good point. I think some people forget that, you know, there are guys out there. I mean, Jason's record is 14-7, and, you know, there would be some people who right away would say, look, you know, he's got 7 losses and 14 fights. But, you know, when you look at some of the guys that have made it to the UFC, and I'm not, you know, bashing Joe Silva's matchup making or Dana White, but, you know, I think the reality is that for certain fans, they want to see a record of 9-2 or 10-0, and a lot of fans, the casual fans, they don't know anything about people who don't fight in Pride or the UFC, so that looks good, it sounds good. And then when you've got a guy like Jason with a record of 14-7, and then, you know, those types of fans and those people aren't going to take the time to look and say, hey, well, look, here's a loss to Patrick Cote, or here's a loss to Caleb Starnes, you know, and like, here's a close decision loss to Marvin Eastman or Shoney Carter. So, you know, it's tough. You're right. There's a lot of guys like him out there with similar kind of records.
Yeah, I think, I think one exposure erases all that. You know, one good fight, one good fight on TV erases all that, as it does with a good record, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple guys, you know, out there with unblemished records that are still defending them, and that's great. But I think as soon as you see, you know, as soon as you see someone fight, and you sort of get a sense of what they're capable of, then your record becomes somewhat irrelevant. And McDonald, I hate to harp on the theme. McDonald's one of those guys. As was Cote. You know, these guys fought hard. Fight, exciting fight for 5 rounds, and it was for me that was one of the fights of the year.
Yeah, and for the record too, Cote won that fight by rear naked choke. It didn't go to decision.
Mm.
He got it early in the 5th round.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Right at the end of the 5th. Yeah.
And you're right. Cote is an excellent example of a guy who's got a few losses and he's come a long ways. His wrestling is amazing. And it's really turned
mm-hmm.
him around. And
mm-hmm.
speaking of the UFC, let's quickly look ahead to UFC 61 before we get out of here. Obviously, we talked about Hermes, Franca. We talked with him about his fight with Jordan coming up. Let's get into the big fights. Tim Sylvia versus Andrei Arlovsky. Who are you picking, Brendan?
I've got to go with Andrei Arlovsky. He seems devastated at the loss, and I think he again was maybe succumbed to a little bit of the. I don't want to say he wasn't well prepared for that fight, but I think he's succumbed to a lot of the hype that surrounded him, and I think he's more than capable of digging down deep and putting away Sylvia, dispatching him early and heinously.
I think I'm actually gonna go with Sylvia. When you look at both fights and you see the fact that Andre, you know, dropped Tim with a fairly similar punch and I know some people would say that Tim, you know, he scrambled up to his credit and knocked Arlovsky out, sort of exposing maybe the chin that some have called as being weak. But yeah, there's something about this, and I get the feeling that I think Tim, and because of his camp, you know, the Miletich Fighting System camp, I think he'll make some adjustments, and I think that this fight actually might go to the ground for a bit or go to a decision, and I'm gonna go with Sylvia. I don't know why, but I just think that he's gonna pull it out.
Well, only time will tell, Kelsey. I have to adamantly disagree with you, but we've somehow missed our promised weekly segment. Kelsey and Brennan eat shit, so maybe next week only one of us can host it. So
let the
fight decide.
Well, and then Tito Ortiz, Ken Shamrock. I'm guessing we're both gonna be picking the same here.
Yeah, I think it's a freak fight. They've done a good job to hype it. I'm sure they'll get lots of pay-per-view buys. And in a sense, I'm torn because I was I watched the show with them both. You know, I was kind of drawn into that. And to be quite honest, I think I was very, very surprised that Tito redeemed his character for me on that show and demonstrated a lot of character, and I was very surprised by that. So, you know, I'm intrigued in the I'm intrigued by the drama. In terms of an MMA fight, I don't know. I'd rather watch, you know, two cats fight in my backyard. I think it'd be more entertaining because I don't think this is going to work out well for Mr. Shamrock. All respect to him, but, you know, I think that ship sailed.
Well, I, you know what, I'm going to go with Tito as well, but I don't think it's going to be the stomping that maybe a lot of people do think, to be honest. I think Tito might come into this a little bit on edge. He's got everything to lose, and Ken's got everything to win and nothing to lose. So I think it's going to be Tito, but I think it's going to be a little bit closer. I think the action standing is going to go a little bit longer than their previous fight. And I think Ken's worked on a stand-up probably a lot. That, you know, that fight was, you know, over 3 years ago now. So I'm going to go with Tito. I'm going to say... you know, he's going to probably pull it out either by stoppage in the third round or you know, get a unanimous decision. But I don't think it's going to be as one-sided as their first encounter.
My my prediction is that we're going to be able to see a lot of the undercard fights, if not all of the undercard fights, with the vast amount of time saved on the two main events.
Dan Christensen, Frank Mir, you know, not many people are really talking about this fight. Dan Christensen beat Brad Imes in his last fight. Frank Mir, you know, had a disappointing outing coming back from his motorcycle accident. Who are you picking to win this fight?
Well, you know, I've got to go with Mir, but under the I have to qualify my remarks, my following remarks under the heading of filthy rumor, but I read somewhere that Mir had actually had problems with his training camp and I won't go any further to say than that because it's unsubstantiated, but do you know anything more about this?
No, I know what you're referring to, and you're absolutely right. There's been some talks that there's been some rumors circulating, and I'll reiterate, just rumors that he had some problems with his camp and maybe even left camp, that his camp were disappointed with the effort he was putting in, but I haven't seen any or read any confirmation from his instructors or training partners or Frank Mir. And same goes for Tito Ortiz, too. There's actually been a few rumors circulating that he might be injured, that his knee might not be recovered. If people remember, that fight had been called off, the fight with Ken, because of his knee injury. And now these rumors are you know, coming back again, saying that maybe he's not going to be ready and that he's had a disappointing training camp. But again, you know, there's no official comment from anyone, so it could be completely, you know, false, so... I guess we won't know on either case with Mir or Tito until afterwards. Josh Berkman versus Josh Neer. To me, this is probably, you know, one fight that, you know, I guess maybe hardcore MMA fans are the most excited about, as they should be. Two great welterweights. Josh Neer looked very impressive, taking out Joe Stevenson in his last fight, and Berkman's has looked impressive as well. He lost his last fight to John Fitch, I believe it was. But yeah, do you have someone to pick in this fight?
I really like them both, and to me, in a sense, both of these guys are, I would say they're almost what is becoming stereotypical American fighters. You know, both good wrestlers, both working out of good camps, both really strong, very athletic. To me, I agree. This is going to be a great fight. I think it might be a little bit more interesting on the ground. I think it'll be very dynamic, probably on the ground. In terms of the stand up, you know, I'm not sure who has better stand up. I'm not convinced. But Berkman, I think has something to prove. So I'm slightly favoring him, but certainly not married to that decision.
Yeah, I don't even know if I could make a call on this one because I've only seen each guy fight in the UFC a couple times, and they're both great welterweights. And you know what? I'll go with Josh Neer just because I think, you know, he might have be a, on coming in a little bit more confident with than Berkman coming off a loss. So that's really the only way I can make a call on that. And then the last fight I want to quickly talk on, and then we got to get out of here, is Eze Edwards taking on Joe Stevenson in a lightweight fight. And two great lightweights here. Great. This should be another great competitive fight. Who are you picking?
I've got to go with Eze Edwards. I know people have now jumped off the Eves bandwagon, the unofficial lightweight champion Eves bandwagon. But I was on for a long time, and I think Eves represents a level of a fighter that I don't think Stevenson is accustomed to, and I don't think we're talking world class lightweight, and I just don't think Stevenson's there, despite all the hype surrounding him. He certainly didn't demonstrate. He's supposed to be supposedly a wizard on the ground, but he certainly didn't demonstrate much wizardry in his last fight. And I can't see him stepping up to defeat someone like Eves.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, right away, people are going to say, "Well, look, Edwards got submitted by Mark Hominick, who is not noted for his ground skills," and saying that, I mean, comparatively to his stand-up skills. But I'm going to go with Eve Edwards as well. And the reason I say that is I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be a really good fight. But I think people underestimate Eve's ground game. And I think Joe will get him down a few times in the fight. But I think Eve will do enough to get it back standing. And I think he'll win the stand-up exchanges. So I'm going to go with Eve. I think he's going to get maybe like a split decision or get the decision. I don't think he'll knock Joe out. I think that there'll be quite a bit of action on the ground. But I'm going to go with Eve as well.
What about the snowman?
Yeah, I don't know too much about his opponent, you know, Anthony Parash. I really don't know much about him. Apparently, he's got some stand-up ability, but outside of that, I don't know much. I would have to go with Jeff Monson just because of the fact that, you know, he's got great takedowns and a very controlling ground game, and so I'm going to go with Monson.
It would have been nice to see to allow Monson to strut his stuff a little bit more, and this guy almost looks like a carbon copy of Munson's last fight, and I think it appears that they're trying to groom him, and he's been on some big shows, but they're certainly not providing him with opponents that would seem to flatter his stand-up skills, especially.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, and, you know, whether or not the UFC heavyweight division is pretty thin, let's face it, so any heavyweight that goes on a streak right now and puts together two or three fights is going to be in the title mix right away, you would think. But
all right, Kelsey.
Yeah, let's call it a night. It's been a long day. So we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the fights, man, and thanks again for coming on the show.
And you as well. I imagine you'll find some rundown dive stripper bar that's showing the UFC on a 13-inch black and white television as usual. So
yeah, enjoy that. That's my place, man. That's
while
my
apartment. Feast on opulent delicacies with my beer belly sharecropper associates.
Sweet. I wish I could be there for that. That sounds really enticing. Actually, I have been there for that. If anyone wants to know, and it's no picnic, let me tell you. All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.